If a church wants to not just survive into the future, but literally thrive, these are key issues that they need to be looking at and working on.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. It goes unsaid that churches are vital to the health and well-being of both our citizens and our society. But in American culture today, many churches and pastors find themselves under increasing levels of scrutiny and sometimes even attacks from those who often hold a different worldview. Church leaders need to be wise and discerning and take practical steps to protect their ministries from these growing attacks. Today, we're fortunate to be joined by a man who is helping pastors and ministry leaders do just that. David Gibbs III serves as president and general counsel of the National Center for Life and Liberty, or NCLL, a legal ministry that seeks to protect the rights of churches and Christian organizations across our nation. A graduate of Duke Law School, David is a well-known speaker and author and a highly accomplished trial attorney. He is perhaps most well-known as the lead attorney in the Terri Schiavo case, where he represented Terri Schiavo's parents before the U.S. Supreme Court in an attempt to maintain life-sustaining measures to preserve Terri's life, which was ultimately lost, unfortunately, in 2005. Currently, the NCLL is hosting Protect Your Church legal seminars in many cities around the country, including here in North Carolina, and we're excited to talk to David about that today. David Gibbs, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you back on the show.
John, it's always my honor and privilege to be with you. Believe in you, your voice, your leadership. And as you're talking about the church, it gets me excited because I'm someone who believes the answer isn't in the courtroom. It's not in the State House or the White House. It is in the church house. And keeping our churches strong and vibrant is so important.
Now, David, tell us a little bit about the goal of the Protecting Your Church seminars that you're doing. And why is it important for churches to be thinking about legal liability issues, especially when pastors and other church leaders clearly would rather be focused on ministering in their communities and sharing the love and truth of Jesus Christ to the world?
Well, John, we don't want to distract pastors. We love pastors, church leaders, ministry leaders, as they are, many of them, volunteers and sacrificing for the work of the Lord. But if you don't tend to these legal or liability type issues, first of all, you're putting your entire church at risk, which is bad stewardship. Second of all, you could be putting your workers at risk. But then number three, and I think this is important as well, you could be putting innocent people at risk. We think about children in particular, vulnerable adults or others that are in our churches, and making sure that as ministry leaders, we are keeping our ministry safe. Now, I do want to remind folks, you know, if you're totally risk adverse, you could say, well, we just can't do anything, and you could talk yourself out of having any ministry. Our heartbeat at the NCLL is maximum ministry. So whether you're a pastor or ministry leader, we want to encourage you to keep doing, do what you're called to, do what your vision is, do what you feel led to do. But there's a smart way and a less smart way to do everything. And so we want maximum ministry, but we encourage folks to do that with minimal liability.
So, David, what do you see are the most common weak points or vulnerabilities that make churches susceptible to legal challenges or other challenges of concern?
Well, I think there's a few areas that, you know, if you were as a church to say, you know, what could we get sued for, and I'll just use a big number, $1 million lawsuit in the next couple of years, it would generally be one of two things. It would be a bad accident, and we understand that vehicles, when you're moving buses or vans or personal cars, there's always a risk of an accident, and churches need to be aware that there is liability for the ministry in terms of who they allow to drive, what vehicles they use, how they maintain or manage their fleet. And so that's one area. And then the other one is children's ministry. And boy, we've watched in the news, whether it's the Catholic Church or the Baptist Church or any other ministry, being hit hard with these allegations of child abuse and mishandling that. And churches need to realize in today's world, it's very important. I believe if a child is safe anywhere, they should be safe at church. And so very important that churches understand they need to screen their workers. They need to have written policies. For example, the two worker rule being an excellent policy. And then number three, they need to report suspicions of child abuse. It's very important that churches understand the culture of cover-up will put you in court. And worse than putting you in court, it puts children at risk.
Yeah. So, David, what kind of tools and resources are available to churches to be proactive in defending against legal challenges or circumstances, as you've been talking about, that could lead to potential legal challenges?
Well, tools and resources, number one, it takes time and attention. You know, I think it's kind of like people like to talk about diet or exercise. You know, a lot of times, someday I'm going to lose weight, or I'm going to work on being a little more fit. And it's an easy thing to procrastinate. And so dealing with legal issues or other things, I think sometimes pastors have a mindset of almost, if I ignore it, it just doesn't exist, not realizing the thing you ignore could end up being the greatest risk to your ministry. And so encouraging them to realize the importance of it. I also tell folks, you know, there's a lot of concern about the church. They talk about the nothings, people leaving churches. Younger people are looking for churches that handle these areas well. In particular, younger people want to see a church that's open and transparent with its finances. They don't want, you know, backfilled room and mystery as to what happens with the dollars. They want transparency. And then obviously younger people are most concerned about the safety and protection of their children. They want to have doors that are clear and teachers that have been screened and situations that are well run. And if you say our church is aging out or graying out or we're losing folks, realize that sometimes taking a proactive leadership role in dealing with the legal and financial health of your church can also help grow your church.
I know you also talk about physical safety in churches. Where do you recommend churches start in regards to evaluating their overall campus security?
Well, the excellent point, because we live in a world where one shooter can create that 5 to 10 minutes no ministry ever wants to live through. And we certainly don't want people to live in fear, but increasingly we're in a more violent society. And so what I encourage pastors and ministry leaders, and this is really the person at the top, need to start building what I call a culture of prevention. Now, what I mean by that, I'm not asking that, you know, older people have weapons or anything like that. That's a response. But the culture of prevention is where everybody is working together to be looking around, to be paying attention, to evaluating risk. Certainly we want to greet visitors. Certainly we want to minister to hurting people. Certainly we don't want to be judgmental as people walk in the door. But we also need to be evaluating, is this person a safety risk to our children or to our congregation? And building that culture of prevention ministry-wide, whether it's greeters, people in the pews, and they see things or they wonder about things or they see a person's on the sex abuse registry and they now see them on the campus. All right, they notice something, but then what do they do with it? And what I strongly recommend is that you have somebody, smaller churches, it might be the pastor, bigger churches may have a head of education, head of security or safety, but where do they take that information? And if the churches would all build on that culture of prevention and then knowing where to take that information, the hope and prayer is there would never be that moment where they would have to respond to an act of violence on their campus.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
I know one topic, David, that you cover in the seminars that may not necessarily come to immediate attention is the financial health of the church. In your opinion, how does the financial condition of a church really fit into the overall concept of protecting that ministry?
Well, at a number of levels, John. First of all, stewardship is unto the Lord. I mean, this is the Lord's money. And so, for example, being embezzled against, and I deal with churches every week that have had people come in and embezzle, they haven't just stolen money. They haven't just stolen from a nonprofit organization. They've stolen from God, in my opinion. So, you know, making sure that you're careful with the Lord's assets, that they're managed well. But then also the transparency. Younger people, good church members want to see a church that handles its finances well. They'll be encouraged to give more. They'll be encouraged to give consistently. If they have confidence that the church is handling the funds appropriately, that means having policies, that means having financial teams, that means having things in place where there's accountability and where embezzlement, obviously it could happen anywhere, but the risk would become quite low because the church has taken the time. Now, church safety policies, church financial policies are very individualized. I don't want to put people in a panic. Somebody says, look, we're 20 people, we're a small church, it's just my wife and I. Well, you're going to have a much smaller, less sophisticated both safety plan and financial plan. large ministry with thousands of people on the campus each weekend, it would be reasonably expected that it will be way more sophisticated. But taking the time to properly evaluate your ministry finances, evaluate your ministry safety risks, evaluate your children or other ministry outreaches, and making sure that you have the plan in place to protect your ministry, in my mind, that's good stewardship and it'll let your church be healthy and strong.
Well, that sounds great. Now, David, what do you see as kind of the number one impediment to churches implementing safety strategies and the kinds of things that you talk about in protecting your church seminars? And who is responsible? Who really should take the responsibility for pursuing the implementation of these strategies in the church setting?
John, the number one problem is a pastor, ministry leader may come to a seminar, get good information, and they go back and they run into what I call the cold spirit of, we've never done it that way before.
You know, I've never heard that.
And we're just locked in and bless God, you know, God's taken us this far, we'll just keep going. And in some respects, they view acting sort of irresponsibly or like it's still the 1970s as an acceptable mode of ministry. What I encourage folks is you have to go back and you have to encourage and educate your people. Number one, times have changed. I mean, just a simple one. The old days, boys with boys and girls with girls was a bulletproof plan for child safety. Now with the whole change in culture, that's not necessarily a good way to approach it. And so you have to look at things differently. Times have changed. But then number two, I remind folks, nothing wrong needs to happen at your church for an allegation to be made. We watch whether it's a Supreme Court nominee or others that just an allegation can have such a devastating impact. And so it's very important that the church not just protect against bad actors, but also to operate in such a way that they can withstand any false accusations.
So overall, David, do you believe that things in our country are getting better or getting worse as it comes to the implementation and the, you know, the necessity for having these types of protections in churches?
I think we're watching where certainly people are beginning to realize the need. And I think we have that through whether it's a shooting where, you know, 50 lives are lost on a church campus or whether it's the Catholic Church acknowledging different things in the news. So I think the media has raised awareness in the culture that, you know, as a church, as a nonprofit organization, we need to be more careful. But that still doesn't mean that it's not hard work and that it requires some diligence. And like anything worth achieving, you need to set goals and move forward a step at a time. And so I think we're watching a lot of good churches work on it. And by the way, I will say this, not to be in any way negative towards any church, but the churches that choose to bury their head and ignore these issues most likely aren't going to survive. They will die out or they will get litigated out of existence. And so if a church wants to not just survive into the future, but literally thrive, these are key issues that they need to be looking at and working on.
Well, David, we're unfortunately just about out of time for our conversation this week. But before we go, I know many of our listeners have been interested by our conversation and would love to get their hands on some helpful information about how they can implement a strategy in their church to protect their church. But also, where can our listeners go to learn more about the National Center for Life and Liberty and the Protecting Your Church legal seminars?
Then go to our website at ncll.org, ncll, just remember, .org for the nonprofit, or they can call us, 888-233-6255, and they can reach out. And I would do this, John, anybody that emails or contacts and mentions your broadcast and that we had this conversation on air, I'll send them a free legal resource, a document checklist for their church, something they could look through, think about, help evaluate, and that may be a first step for them to do kind of an internal evaluation, and we would send that as a gift to them if they just reach out again to ncll.org, ncll.org, or they can call the 888-233-6255 phone number.
And with that, David Gibbs III, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and your very important work to preserve life and liberty across our nation, and pray that the Lord will just go with you and protect you as you seek to minister to many, many across our land. Thank you.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. to listen to our radio show online, and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.